Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. If you haven't finished your holiday shopping yet, don't panic. We've got a secret source for incredible gifts, and that's Uncommon Goods. They've got unique handpicked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. They spark joy, wonder, delight. They're very cool and very special, and there's no way anyone else will be gifting them. So if you want to avoid making holiday shopping stressful and chaotic, and God forbid you just end up getting everyone just gift cards, go to Uncommon Goods now and get started instead. Plus, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you are supporting artists and small businesses. And if you're actually looking for a gift that you don't have to worry about getting lost in the mail, you have to check out their Uncommon Experiences. They're amazing opportunities to have fun and connect in new ways, from tarot card reading, astrology charting, cooking, mixology, crafts, gardening, so much more. So to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/paddockproject. That's uncommongoods.com/paddockproject for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Paddock Project. Can't believe we only have one race left of the season, but we will not be leaving the season without a plenty of things to talk about. This was an absolutely wild race weekend. So we have so much to discuss. I'm Sarah.
I'm Chessa.
And I'm Tiggy. Where to even begin with this race? It was actually chaos. And I'm glad we've had a few hours to decompress afterwards, because I fear if we had gone straight in after the race, we all would have been absolutely on one with all of the crazy penalties and decisions and fights and radio messages. But my sense is that everyone is just kind of feeling the end of a 24 race calendar, a triple header, Vegas to Qatar, sprint weekend. I think people are just tired. Like, we just saw a lot of frustration on show. The FIA stuff we'll get to with the penalties and the kind of arbitrariness nature of it all. But we also had a lot of retirements, safety cars. It just kind of felt like the wheels were coming off the bus a little bit this race. And it wasn't that fun to watch. Like, I think I usually love to root for chaos and excitement, but this just felt like a little bit too much. And I don't know, I kind of felt for the drivers. I know we had differing opinions on like the radio messages and stuff, but I kind of felt for them.
Like, the group chat was contentious this morning. Yeah,
we'll get to that. But yeah, I think when Salam is saying that you as a driver don't have any right to know how the FIA is run or how the sport is run, that just feels like so wrong on so many levels.
And 100%.
I don't know. I kind of get a lot of the frustration here. And now that doesn't make some things right, but we'll chat about it. I just thought this was a little bit crazy. I can't wait to talk about
it. Yeah. I could not agree more. For like my main takeaway, I feel the same thing, where it was just like everyone is tired. Yeah, another race. What I will say is I am really excited for Max and how he was able to pull that off, despite all the drama leading up to the race and then during the race. But overall, I think it was actually, as a spectator, a fun race to get close to the end of the season with, because there is so much going on. I think in past seasons, by the time we've reached the end of the season, even with a World Drivers' Championship crowned, it's been a little bit lackluster. And so to have a little bit of the action, a little of the drama, at least from a spectator perspective, is really great. And of course, they put a sprint as the second to last race of the season. Like, how could you not complain? But yeah, I really do feel for these drivers and the amount of chaos and just tiredness happening from them.
Definitely. I think the stewards are the huge story of the weekend. I totally agree with Tiggy. It felt shocking that Salaya made that comment very belatedly too about the drivers releasing the statement about the fines, and that how they feel like they're inconsistent and like to know what that money is used for. And it's very ironic that that comes out on the same exact weekend that then there is very widespread criticism about stewarding. I love the F1 TV commentary. I think they do a great job. And one thing that was shocking to me was they asked, it was maybe David Coulthard or Julian Palmer asked the group, okay, out of the three, we've had so many penalties, but out of the three really big ones, Max's grid drop, Lewis's drive-through penalty, and Lando's stop-go penalty, do you agree with any of those? And all of the commentators said no, which is
crazy.
So rare, I feel like.
Arbitrary.
Like, right. And I feel like that just says it all, because I feel like it's so rare to have that type of reaction. Normally they would say, oh, it's a little harsh, but whatever. I see where it's coming from. But they were just honestly confused. So that was shocking. I think another big story here is, of course, constructors being live into the finale in Abu Dhabi. And I think one thing we'll definitely have to talk about with Lando's penalty is that kind of motivated at all by really wanting to keep the championship fight alive until the last race? I don't know.
If so, that is corruption. Like, that is
rigging the outcome.
Corruption.
So. I feel like it was four stewards, I think, that had to vote for it. So I highly doubt it, but it is odd that when McLaren is about to win constructors, there's then this penalty that's so harsh that even the commentators can't find an explanation. And
they were
then,
like, there's literally nothing, there's no worse penalty except a disqualification than what Lando was given.
People were so confused. Like, we had so many DMs and stuff coming in too in our Instagram. Like, it was insane.
And the commentators couldn't even see if it was a yellow flag or a slippery surface flag, which is crazy. Like, we'll get to it.
It was wild. I think another big story for me was kind of seeing some of the struggles and growing pains of some of the rookies like Colapinto and Lawson, who came out so strong out of the gate. We were talking so much about their performance, saying, oh, are they contenders for Red Bull seats? Are they going to be besting their teammates and really putting them through their paces? And I think we're seeing how even with some of these really talented rookies, there is still a huge learning curve of having to actually compete in a Grand Prix weekend, week in and week out, and be dealing with really difficult situations like overtaking, battles with more experienced drivers, turn one incidents, and they're definitely kind of falling victim to all of that, as kind of all rookies do, except for maybe Oscar.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it just kind of puts Oscar in this rarefied air, as he's not a rookie anymore, but like essentially.
When he was.
Yeah.
He was perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. How about MVP and LVP? Tiggy, what do you got?
I have to give it to Joe and Kick Steak Team Sauber, whatever you want to call them. I'm so happy for them. We have been debating for a while now if we thought that Sauber would get points by the end of the season, and they finally did. Joe came P8. It was very well deserved too. It was a great performance by him and managing to get through the chaos and everything. So I'm so happy for them. It's, I dare say, a fairy tale ending, but that's not – obviously,
that's kind of what they said in the radio. They were like, you're writing the history for this team. Like, it was very emotional.
It is. And obviously there's still one more race left, but I'm so happy that Joe gets to go out with having scored points and that the team is not pointsless all season. So that was a big MVP and a bright spot in a sea of just kind of sadness and chaos.
Yeah, I think for this one, I have to give it to Max. I'm just happy that he pulled through. It was exciting for him. And he did, like, in the start, he really just did show how good of a driver he is. And that to me was just like very exciting to see. So what about you, Sarah?
I agree with that, unsurprisingly, on the Max. I think always great to see when he was starting from P2, had to overtake off the line, had to survive three pretty difficult safety car restarts with Lando chomping at the bit and the Ferraris also quite tight behind Lando, and being able to survive that error and keep Lando behind him on the second safety car restart when he had a bit of a mistake on the restart. He couldn't get his hard tires warmed up. So again, just Max really being able to pull through when he's under pressure.
For LVP, I feel like it's hard to give it to anyone other than the penalties and the stewards. I think one major moment that we haven't talked about yet was the debris on the track that was not – there was no safety car called for it. Bottas ran it over, and then two drivers, Lewis and Carlos, both got punctures from it and had to hobble back to the pit lane. Like, what took so long to call that, or to call a safety car or something? That just felt inexcusable to me. It ruined multiple people's races. And I hated to see the drivers kind of going at each other, like Max and Lando, Max and George, like, when it's really, in my mind, the stewards' fault, like, that these penalties were happening. Max was mad at George for going after the penalty in quali, and then people were frustrated at Max for tattling on Lando so much and checking back in on that yellow flag penalty like 15 times. And I just hate to see these drivers going at each other for it when it's really the problem, I think, lies in the fact that this the race is not stewarded properly and there's a rule book and it's not being followed. Like that
the fact that Max, while he's driving, has to call in and check in multiple times to see if something is being honored or not, or how the rules are being followed. Like, you should have a rule book that everyone follows and knows. And like, we've always talked about the gray area, but it's insane that a driver can be driving and having to be like pitching his case on the side as well. It's wild.
A great point, because if drivers all thought that clear kind of violations would just be enforced evenly, you would never hear. We hear it all the time with, oh, they pushed me off. Oh, they, which it is kind of a gut check reaction. They're going to be calling in to make sure that everyone saw it. But part of it is probably coming from a place of, oh, I need to push my case or it's not going to be a penalty, which apparently is kind of how George felt too, and feeling like, evidently feeling like he needed to really advocate for the position. Whereas if it just felt like it was all predictable and evenly enforced, that wouldn't be as much of an issue.
Yeah.
I have to say, kind of, I think a combination of Checo and then literally everyone's radio, with a special honorary mention to Hamilton for the quote, retire the car, which he has said before as well, which I just think we do not hear from people. Usually you obviously are not going to retire unless they're is a car failure, not just because the race is going horribly. It was obviously horrible luck and just such a difficult race to get through, but a lot of people end up in that position. The stakes, the poor stakes, have to drive around at P18 every race, and you kind of don't hear them saying, oh, I got a 10-second penalty or I got a big penalty, let's retire the car. It's just not really something that you do, and I think it's hard to see after 10 years at the team. Obviously understandable that Hamilton is super frustrated, but just being so critical of the team on the radio, which George was too. George was cursing at them after they put the hards on one of the safety car restarts. But George, I think he's there. He's kind of there for the long haul. And for Lewis, it's a little bit kind of like, there's one more race left. The season's over. The championships are decided. It's some of the commentary just felt unnecessary. Alonso too was very spicy. There was just, to Tiggy's point, a lot of frustration overall. And then for Checo, the potential spin, driver error, maybe car failure, I don't know. But regardless, he was kind of just struggling as per usual. And it seems like the team is explicitly acknowledging that they're having to have a conversation about his future.
Yeah.
Well, what Christian said is that it's up to Checo to decide.
No, it's like
Checo
not.
Needs to know what to do with his own future, and he will make the right decision.
That's
which,
like
I think is maybe just a veiled way of saying, of trying to save Checo's face a bit, but it just, I don't know. That seems silly.
No, that's
to
like
me.
When your mom is like, oh, I'm not mad at you, I'm just disappointed. Like
I guess what they're hoping is that Checo will make a big retirement announcement and that they don't have to say,
be the bad guy.
He's cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. It feels a little late for that.
Holy.
I just feel like the slow burn is making it so awkward and just bad for everyone. And then Checo posting the Wolf of Wall Street meme, which to this day is my favorite moment of the entire
Tiggy's
season.
Only brought it up in every single episode.
Like, Red Bull PR is probably like, oh, FML.
That's a good one. I agree with all of you guys' LVPs. I'll throw like a kind of fun LVP in there, but it's basically, it's the 100% streak or record of having a safety car at every Qatar race, which checks out for the chaos that happened this weekend.
Haven't there only been like three races though?
It doesn't matter. It's still a fun record to say. Okay, but this leads us into how our hot takes held up. My hot take was that the Checo retirement announcement was coming this weekend. It did not, but it seems like it is getting more and more imminent, so I might as well just have to make it for my hot take for next race too.
I think mine was a Charles win, which of course did not happen, but kind of a very surprising P2, which we'll take. He was even surprised and happy to be there in the post-race interview.
Just happy to be here.
I had a McLaren double podium, which obviously did not come true with the Lando stop-and-go penalty, but I feel like it could have been possible.
Yes. That would have been a really good one.
It was looking good, and they got a double podium for the sprint, so check on that.
Give you at least half on that one.
Half a point.
For a gift that's always on time and lasts a lifetime, you can't do better than Masterclass. With Masterclass, your loved ones can learn from the best to become their best. Just take a look at the iconic teacher lineup, including Anna Wintour, Kris Jenner, and Gordon Ramsay. It's the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with over 200 of the world's best. That's why Wirecutter calls it an invaluable gift. These classes are the perfect gift, and they really do make a difference. 88% of Masterclass members feel that it's made a positive impact on their lives. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/forthegirls for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/forthegirls. The holidays are coming, and they are a great chance for self-reflection, goal setting, and connecting with loved ones. And learning a new language goes hand in hand with this, since it opens doors to meaningful conversation, enriching experiences, and of course, personal development. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language that you want to learn. Personally, my extended family all speaks Italian, so I'm using Rosetta Stone to brush up on my skills before seeing them all for the holidays. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Plus, it's super intuitive to use and fully immersive and designed for fast language acquisition. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a short time, Paddock Project listeners can get Rosetta Stone's Lifetime Membership Holiday Special. This offer will not last long. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your holiday offer at rosettastone.com/today for yourself or as a gift that keeps giving. The end of the season, the end of the F1 season is upon us. And as we're busy going to races and wrapping up everything, we are trying to do everything we can to feel our best. And one thing that we have been using to help us are our Happy Mammoth products. We've been using them for a while, especially Estro Control. It really helps us support our hormones and alleviate those pesky PMS symptoms, including bloating. It also assists in maintaining cognitive health and promoting liver function and digestive health, which is really good as we're really busy and wrapping up and heading into holiday party season. Happy Mammoth, who also has the amazing Hormone Harmony supplement, it's a brand that's dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women, and they make no compromises when it comes to quality. For a limited time, get 15% off your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today. Passion, drive, and patience, the formula for winning F1 championships, is sometimes also what you need to keep your beloved car running day in and day out. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're looking for speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. They have over 122 million parts for your car. You'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And they have eBay Guaranteed Fit, which means your part is guaranteed to fit your car every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're about burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. So keep your car alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Okay, getting into the race weekend. So we only had one practice session because it was a sprint race. It definitely reflected the tight battle that we have in the Constructors' Championship, which, as we know, will be going on to Abu Dhabi. We had Charles topping the tables here, followed by Lando and Oscar.
For sprint quali in SQ1, it really came down to the wire. We had Lando on top. And then for cuts, we had Checo, Tsunoda, Ocon, Joe, and Colapinto. And then for SQ2, Norris stayed on top. There was a strong showing from Liam, who managed to pull through to SQ3. For cuts, we had Alonso, Albon, Bottas, Stroll, and Magnussen. And then for SQ3, again, Lando was just on top, got pole, followed by George, who was continuing his strong run of form, especially in quali. George split the McLaren front row. Oscar got P3. And then we had Sainz, Leclerc, Max, Lewis, Gasly, Hulk, and Lawson. So some great midfield action rounding it out there.
For this sprint, super exciting start. Colapinto and Checo started from the pit lane, which was not the exciting part, but Checo did not move on the race start. So Colapinto literally just went around him, which
such
was
a bad
wild.
Look for Checo.
Yeah. And then for Lando, finally a good start for him to stay ahead, and an amazing start from Oscar, who got ahead of Russell after turn one. Hamilton got ahead of Charles, gained two spots, while Verstappen was down to ninth, having a bad start, lost three places, which was a very rare move for him. But I think the main story of the sprint was the McLaren teamwork and notably Lando's teamwork. So throughout the race, Oscar was defending closely against George. Lando backed off at critical moments to keep Piastri in DRS range so that he could keep a buffer to George. And this was super frustrating to George. Obviously, he had a few spicy moments on the radio. And then Lando sort of towards the end made a comment, quote, like, should I save him or ... in reference to dropping back to keep Oscar in DRS range or not. And the team, despite him telling him not to, Lando did let Oscar through right at the end of the sprint to take the win. So this was to repay Oscar for doing the same thing for him at the Sao Paulo sprint earlier this season when Lando was in the driver's championship fight. But I thought this was crazy.
I loved it.
The last corner that Lando let Oscar through for the win. And I loved that from Lando. I thought that was so sweet.
It was cool.
It was very daring because especially with constructors on the line, it was very possible that George was going to get through. George was, I think, half a second, only a couple of car lengths behind them.
They did. He just saved it right for the last minute. And I think it was totally the right move in terms of just like keeping the peace with the teammate stuff, just like internally between the two of them, building what's the opposite of bad blood, like good rapport, or just like building a solid foundation as teammates. So I think that was
true, especially nice now that Drivers' Championship is closed and exactly. He's going to need Oscar next year.
Exactly.
Totally. They're in it for the long haul, theoretically.
So. Yeah. Other key moments from the sprint, we had a battle between Lewis and Charles going side by side, literally 1 inch apart. It was very poetic, given that they're going to be teammates next year. Such good, clean racing. In the end, Charles did pull ahead just because he had the pace. And then I think one thing that was really interesting to note too was with 5 laps to go, Checo pitted for an entire new front wing and setup because they were going to try to test it for him for the race. And it's basically, you never see this from Red Bull, but they're basically like, okay, he made zero progress during this sprint race. Nothing better is going to happen to him. We might as well try to just like figure out what our plan is going to be and test what we can for the next race, sort of just like writing off the rest of the sprint. So something interesting to note there. I don't think it really helped him in the long run anyways, but yeah, we like the Checo story continues.
Again, with the funny commentary on F1 TV, they said something like, yeah, when you're in a Red Bull and you're testing new parts during an active race setting, it's just really
– didn't get worse.
Yeah. For quali, Q1, this had a lot of lap times deleted for track limits, close margins, heavy traffic. Charles led the Q1 session here with a surprise showing from Alonso in the top five. Finally, Checo made it through, which shocking to even be saying that, but here we are. And knocked out, we had Alex Albon, Liam Lawson, Hulkenberg, Colapinto, and Ocon.
For Q2, Max came back strong to top this session. We had a very tight top 10 swapping back and forth. We saw both Alonso and Hamilton in the drop zone at points, but they battled through. And then for knockouts, we had Gasly, Joe, Bottas, Tsunoda, and Stroll.
For Q3, everyone but Max really headed out earlier, just like right as the session started. We had a lot of movement at the top of the grid. Russell was first in P1 for a little bit. Max joined the session with only five or so minutes to go, looked really fast. We had a nice battle for pole between Max, Lando, and George. But in the end, we had Max on pole, then George, Lando, Oscar, Leclerc, Hamilton, Sainz, Alonso, Checo, and K-Mag. And then this is when the first of many of these crazy actions from the stewards happened post quali. They gave Max a one place grid penalty for impeding George during quali, which, like we've said before, none of us really agreed with.
Well, one thing that I thought was interesting is Jenny Gao posted this on Instagram, kind of explaining why the one place grid penalty, because usually you see a three place grid penalty or nothing. Like, the one place is kind of weird. So her analysis was that because George was not on a flying lap, it wouldn't be three place grid penalty. That's what you would get if someone was on a flying lap and you impeded them. But the reason it's not nothing is because there was another car involved, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of confusing. Obviously, a lot of people don't agree with it, but that was Jenny's take, that
it was good.
It kind of was the sweet spot in between the nothing and the three place because George was not himself on a flying lap.
For the race, we will talk a little bit about some of our big highlights here and penalties especially. So for the start, almost everyone started on mediums. A lot of people were struggling with tire warm-up, as we saw, especially for people on hards. It was an incredible start from Max. George had a good getaway, but Max was on it and pulled ahead. It was basically three wide with Lando, and then Lando slipped past George as well. So George had already dropped to P3 by the exit of turn one. And then the first big incident here were the cars at the very back of the grid. Unfortunately, Hülkenberg, Ocon, and Colapinto had a big collision that was deemed a racing incident. Just really horrible luck all around. Hülkenberg was on the inside and locked up, and then Ocon was squeezed in the middle. Colapinto was on the outside. So again, that's why it was deemed a racing incident. But it was a pretty big impact. Both Colapinto and Ocon had to retire, and Hülkenberg had a puncture but was able to continue. A bummer when he's been on such a strong run of form and had an amazing Saturday. And this was, of course, just the start of a lot of incidents, especially in the first part of the race.
So the Stroll incident we come to next, he also hit Albon. He was on the inside, just completely moved in on Albon. Stroll pitted then due to damage. Albon had a huge spin but was somehow able to continue. And Stroll got a 10-second penalty, pitted to serve that penalty, and then did one more lap and just retired the car, took the L on that one. So there was an immediate safety car. Then we had a safety car restart. Max is usually great at safety car restarts. This first safety car pulled off a classic one here, so got off really well. Then Lawson was trying to overtake Bottas, locked up. They both went off but were able to continue, and Lawson got a 10-second penalty for causing a collision. So not great.
For the rest of this first stint, Lando was really keeping Max under pressure, under a 2-second gap between them, and was consistently setting fastest laps. A lot of the drivers were struggling with grip on this track at this point. George was the first to pit of the front runners at lap 24. He had a very slow 7-second stop. Meanwhile, Lewis was super upset about the pace and said, quote, "Is the car broken or dot, dot, dot?" Definitely a little sassy for him. And then this led us to the next major incident, the mirror incident. So Albon's mirror fell off of his car on the main straight. They didn't call the safety car for the debris. Bottas ran it over, caused a ton of extra debris on the track. And on lap 35, both Lewis and Sainz got punctures. There was both a ton of debris, and plus the front left tires were super worn at this point, so it just made them more susceptible to that. So they both got punctures. It was a 10-second stop for both Sainz and Lewis. Then a safety car was called, a ton of pit stops during that safety car. And then, of course, George freaked out on the radio about them putting hards on his car.
So then we had the second safety car restart. This is where Max had a really sketchy restart. Lando almost got past him, but Max held on the inside. Checo spun out here on the restart and said that he lost drive, but the commentators thought maybe the spin was a driver error. And then he did fully pull over and stop the car and had to retire. And then Hülkenberg also had a big spin, kind of another driver error moment of not being able to get these tires warmed up, and beached in the gravel, and his race was also over.
So then we had the third full safety car of the race. And meanwhile, this is when Lando got the 10-second stop and go penalty for failing to slow down under the yellow flags, which meant he had to pit and serve it in the pits. Like we were saying, absolutely massive penalty. There's nothing greater than that except for a disqualification, really. And David Coulthard on F1 TV commentary said, quote, "I am confused, gentlemen. People such a did not understand what was going on." And like we said, they just didn't really understand any of the three major penalties. So I guess the question here is, are stewards just trying to like force the constructors fight down to the last race, which in my mind would be corruption? What's going on? I know we have a new race director, but it just feels like it's, I don't know what's happening, but it's inconsistent, and it's not a good look for the FIA.
Yeah, one thing that seems possible is that they're trying to just enforce more across the board, but that wasn't really announced or at least made public slash clear enough as being a really clear policy change here. I feel like we've seen it recently with some of these really small start infringements getting penalized every time. It seems like maybe certain things, for example, like Lando's yellow flags infringement that they would have let slide a bit, they want to start very harshly enforcing. But it's tough to do that if there hasn't been a really clear announcement and change and setting of expectations, because clearly everyone still thinks it's arbitrary and are confused. And it seems, again, if all of the major commentators are saying there's no basis for this harsh of a penalty, it's really difficult. And again, it just feels like putting the thumb, even if there is no improper motive or anything, it just feels like putting a thumb on the scale of the constructors' battle with that Lando penalty.
Yeah.
Then on the flip side, also what happened to Sainz, because him and Lewis both got that puncture because there wasn't a safety car called, as there should have been, due to a ton of debris on the track. And for Ferrari too, to keep that battle alive, every point mattered. And they would have been without Lando's penalty, they would have been out of it because of Sainz's puncture. So I don't know. It's a tough one. And it seems like if they're gonna be enforcing to the letter, enforcing the harshest penalties every time, they need to make that really clear for next season.
They do. I think they will do a lot of work. They're going to get a lot of criticism from this. As someone who always loves the drama and the fight, I am happy that this kind of like kept the drama going, or the constructors' battle going, up until the last minute. But I do think that they're going to get a lot of heat for this, and hopefully they'll make their rules more black and white, or as black and white as possible. And I think maybe hopefully Slam will have a change of heart and realize that it's important for all of the players in the game to know the rules while they're playing.
Also, I wonder how Tiggy feels about Abu Dhabi and just even hearing the words championship being decided in Abu Dhabi. But also, this makes it so stressful thinking that with four cars in play now it seems really likely that a penalty in Abu Dhabi could become a really material impact here in the constructors'
crazy
fight.
What do you mean by penalty in Abu Dhabi?
The fact that there's four cars kind of in play for constructors, if they are enforcing now, or at least trying to enforce some of these things, like
it'll really, if they do something in Abu Dhabi that causes a penalty.
Yeah.
I just think it's high stakes regardless, penalties or not, but obviously that throws more of a wrench into things.
Sure.
Assuming that penalties are given out fairly, like it's not like one side is at an advantage or a disadvantage based on that. Like they're playing the same game, even if the rules are kind of unclear. But yeah, I feel for McLaren a lot on this one, because I think it's exciting to me that it's McLaren and Ferrari fighting for it. I think if it was Red Bull or Mercedes, it would feel even worse for McLaren to not have clinched it, whatever the word is. But I think given that it's Ferrari, which also hasn't won a Constructors' Championship in a long time, it does feel, I don't know, more exciting going into it. But I do really feel for McLaren. Like, I do think this is theirs to lose, and to have it kind of slip out of their fingertips this race just must feel horrible. Like, Andrea Stella was like, this was a massive missed opportunity not to get it this race.
Yeah.
Lando apologized and everything, even though he probably felt like the penalty was unfair. But yeah, it's really tough.
To wrap up the race before we jump into teams, Lewis got a drive-through penalty for speeding in the pit lane, and that's when he asked to retire the car. And then the team did say he could retire, but then he carried on to finish the race. And then we closed off the symphony of penalties with a 10-second penalty for Albon. I feel like Albon always gets the short end of the stick. He caused a collision with K-Mag at the safety car restart.
Albon, Williams in general, just has the so worst bad luck. I mean, on the... Yeah.
I think they're going to be my new favorite team, though. I think next season I'm going to be a Williams girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
I've always loved the team. I feel like they have good pedigree.
They definitely do. Okay. So for teams, McLaren, absolute roller coaster of a race for them. Just as we've talked about, everything is on the line with constructors. It would be or will be their first this century, which is crazy. And yeah, it's really tough. Like Andrea said, missed opportunity not to get it this race. But I want to talk a little bit about Lando and his apology. Like, I feel like I wouldn't have necessarily expected that from him right away. Like, his radio after the race was literally just, "I'm sorry." And then he talked about how he messed up and just apologized to the team.
I think
it just shows like how much he feels like he's let people down, even though it people don't really agree with the penalty in the first place.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, I don't think he necessarily agreed with it either, but I think when the stakes are this high and the team could be, like you said, winning constructors for the first time in so long, that I think he had a lot of pressure on his back to, you know, make the team happy and perform here. And so I think he kind of just wanted to reflect that in his apology. But I don't think it was like, I'm sorry, I messed up. I think it was more like, I'm sorry, this situation is really crappy.
Well, he did say I bleeped up.
I know, but like, I think like, a lot of that was coming from maybe him just being like, oh my God, it was so close and now it's not.
Yeah. I mean, it's still close. I'm nervous for them. I mean, we saw Oscar throwing it around corners on the edge, literally like so many laps of the race. And the commentators were talking about it a lot too. Like he was just on a razor thin edge of throwing that car around because there is so much at stake. And I'm nervous for next race. Like I hope neither one of them makes a mistake that costs them the championship because the stakes are so high and it's down to the last race. But it's just, it makes me a little bit nervous.
Definitely. To the point about mistakes, I think it was maybe David Coulthard who made this point saying, yes, even though the penalty was really unusually and seemingly unreasonably harsh, it was an error from Lando. And they were saying basically if he does want to be World Drivers Champion, that is just the type of error that you can't be making, any type of unforced error, really, whether it's an on-track error or rules error, you just can't be making those types of mistakes. And I think that's probably why he felt the need to apologize, of even if the penalty wasn't reasonable, it was still a mistake that put them in that position. And then same for Oscar. I really hope it can be a nice clean weekend for them next weekend. Ooh, well, I guess we haven't talked about this. Who do you both want to win now that it's possible that both Ferrari and McLaren win?
Please, McLaren.
For sure.
I would love Ferrari to win it next year, but I think this is McLaren's year.
She's like, as long as Lewis isn't in the contention to win the World Drivers, the Constructors, let's have it be McLaren. And then next year, it'll be Lewis in the Ferrari. That'll be nice.
I just think that would be really nice for Lewis and Charles and Ferrari amazing. As a team.
And so sad for Sainz.
Yeah. But I do really think McLaren deserves it. The way that they've come back this season, it has been the Cinderella story of the entire season. And I think both drivers are so strong and do really deserve it. And I feel that the World Drivers Championship was ever really in contention for Lando this season, but given that he kind of had that as a possibility and didn't get it, I think Constructors would be a nice prize.
Yeah, totally.
All right, jumping into Red Bull. So, of course, we had the Max win, the ninth of the year for him. We had Checo DNF, which is very, very unfortunate. Him finishing eighth in the World Drivers' Championship is the worst a driver's teammate has finished since 1994 when it was Jos Verstappen, which I think is just very poetic and full circle in a kind of a weird, ironic way. So
a driver's champion's teammate.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like the fact that it's Max's dad who has that stat from the 90s is kind of crazy.
It's a crazy stat.
But we were asking that question of like, when is the last time this happened? So here is your answer, 1994.
For Ferrari, it was not the cleanest race for them, but they managed to hang on to the constructors' battle with Leclerc in P2 and Sainz in P6. So as we were saying, we will see the finish of this in Abu Dhabi next weekend.
I thought there was one comment we got on our Radio of the Week or something that they said that the FIA stands for Ferrari International Assistance. Which is actually kind of hilarious. Not that I necessarily agree with that, but I thought that was an iconic
so
comment.
Funny.
That is so funny because now that I think of it, maybe it's just that they break less rules and commit less errors than the other teams, but I actually can't remember the last time Sainz or Charles received a major penalty when it seems like Max and the McLarens and Mercedes get penalized all the time.
Usually we get the like British bias comments, but Ferrari also with their payment from the FIA for their historical standing.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes they do play favorites. for Mercedes. So this at the start, it was already just off to not a great start for Hamilton. Released the clutch early, got a 5-second penalty for a false start. Both drivers, as we discussed, were just really unhappy with the balance of the car. Some of the team's strategy calls, like the hard tires for George and that super long pit stop that cost him a lot of places in the race. I do want to talk a little bit about Hamilton and him being at the end of his career, like at Mercedes. I think he will definitely look back and regret the sort of retire the car commentary stuff. But I do. So I don't condone that, obviously, but I do think it just shows how difficult and frustrating it is at this point where all you want to do is cap off your decade plus with the team on a high and go out well. And right now, like, George is outperforming him. Lewis is saying he's slow. He doesn't know why. Like, he's not getting along with the car. I'm sure it's kind of like weird and frustrating within the team, just given him saying goodbye. And it just probably doesn't even feel real. And so I think there's probably a lot of emotions and stuff at play that we can argue like shouldn't show on track and shouldn't come out. But we're all human. And I can kind of see some of that frustration.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hope that next race is going to be an amazing one for them and something that they can be proud of and look back on, because right now Qatar was not it for them.
I hope so too. And I was going to ask you earlier when we were talking about the retire the car comments, how it made you feel. But I think what you just said makes a lot of sense. And we are only human. Like, imagine how frustrating it must be to be like, I've done this a million times. It literally doesn't feel like it could get any worse. Now I have to sit in this car and like really exert myself and really try and focus. Because again, this is dangerous. So you can't lose focus. And he's kind of just like, oh, I'm at the end of my rope here. I can't even imagine how he feels. Maybe he shouldn't have said it on the radio, but yeah, we are only human.
It's a great point too about really wanting to finish strong and about how nothing is making that easy. The team, the car, George, none of it is making it easy. And it's really tough that it's coinciding with this really strong run of form for George. But fingers crossed that Abu Dhabi can feel like a positive end to the Mercedes era.
Fingers crossed. No one ever thought they'd be saying that about Abu Dhabi specifically for Lewis, but maybe there's a redemption arc here yet to be written. One last thing for Mercedes is that they announced that Mick Schumacher is moving on from his role as reserve driver at the team. So people are saying there's a high likelihood that Bottas will potentially take it, although there has been no official announcement yet. We are eagerly awaiting what is next still for Bottas, but it'll be interesting to see what Mick does, whether he sticks with WEC or something else. But yeah, Mick will be no longer at the right-hand side of Toto on the cameras at every race.
For Aston Martin, Alonso was super upset about the straight line speed of the car. At one point on the radio said, I can't believe it's been the same problem for 2 years. Daddy Stroll, can you keep throwing money at the problem and fix it? Just kidding, he didn't say that. That last part, I think he's probably very frustrated. And then we had the Stroll DNF after his move on Albon. For VCarb, Yuki had an amazing start and gained 5 places quite quickly, but then unfortunately just did not have the pace and dropped right back to where he started at P14.
For Haas, it was a tough day after a really awesome Saturday from Nico. K-Mac had a really ongoing battle with Albon and was so frustrated and ended it with some expletives once he finally got past Albon at the end of the race. And again, the commentator is just doing some great work and saying, this is a fitting end to Kevin Magnussen's Formula One career. And true, going out in true K-Mac fashion. And then for Alpine, it was an awesome weekend from Gasly. So happy for him to be continuing his great run of form recently. And then, again, just another crazy event to happen today. It was announced that Ocon is not going to be racing in Abu Dhabi and that Jack Doohan, who, of course, is taking Ocon's seat next year at Alpine, will be filling in for him. What do you all think about this?
I do not understand it. It feels so disrespectful to me. Like, Ocon, it's his last race at the team. Like, what circumstance would warrant that besides Ocon not being able to drive himself? I saw somewhere that maybe it was like a mutual thing, but that doesn't really make sense. Why would Ocon want to finish the season at the team that he's been driving in? I think that's weird. And does that really benefit Jack Doohan that much to hop into the race, one race at the end of the season? Like, if he doesn't do well, that just, I don't know, I feel like puts a bad taste in his mouth and other people's mouth heading into the off season for no real reason.
To me,
I don't really understand.
It feels so unceremonious, which makes me think that maybe the team like didn't want to do a big send off celebration for Ocon, which makes me then think that like maybe tensions are just really high and they just don't want him on the team anymore, and that they wouldn't do the celebration for him, and they were kind of just like, okay, how can we just make it so we don't have to do a celebration for him? Either way, it's super weird. We don't see this happen often at all, and it is very disrespectful. Like, I think if a driver was on your team, you had a contract for him for the end of the year, did not renew it, etc., or replacing him, like, let him race his last race. But maybe Ocon didn't want to do it, who knows?
But why?
So weird. the mystery continues.
It's really, really bizarre. And agreed on the celebration point. It's like we talked about with Danny Ric not getting to get a proper goodbye or a proper celebration because of how it was handled. If this was only announced after the race, who knows? Maybe internally the team knew sooner and they were able to kind of say their goodbyes or have more of a celebration this weekend. But that's taking away from him the opportunity of for a French team that he's been driving for years to be able to have that big moment next race of thanking the mechanics, thanking the team and everything. Hopefully he'll still be there and can do that in the garage, but obviously just not the same and very different when you're not going to be the one in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what does that say about the team's faith in you or their, I don't know, how much they care about you that they're just willing to slot you out before the season's even over? For the last couple teams here, Williams, Colapinto's turn one incident was Williams' 16th crash of the season. Just such horrible luck. I feel so bad for them. I think they're definitely ready. Those mechanics are ready for a break. And yeah, hopefully next season will be a very different story. But the Cinderella story of the race, Stake, Sauber finally got points. Gojo also got driver of the day. So happy for them and so happy for him. So very exciting. And then another kind of Sauber piece of news is that Audi is selling a stake of the team to the Qatar Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is topical for this race, I guess. But I wonder what that means for what's going on within Audi.
I don't know. We'll have to see more about what that means. It'd be an interesting business case study, Tig. Four driver standings. Okay, we have Max as champion in 429. Then we have Lando at 349. Charles at 341. So definitely look out for this next race. Oscar 291. Carlos 272. George 235. Lewis 211. And then Checo in 152.
Four constructors. There's now 21 points between McLaren and Ferrari going into Abu Dhabi, and there are 44 potential points on the board. McLaren has 640, Ferrari has 619, Red Bull is 581. So it is confirmed that the team with the number one driver is going to be, in fact, the number three constructor. Mercedes has 446, Aston Martin has 92, Alpine is 59, Haas has 54. VCarb has 46, Williams has 17, and Kick is now on the board with 4 points. Woo-hoo! So happy about that. So the other main kind of battle to really look out for next race is going to be Alpine and Haas. Ooh, as I say this.
And VCarb potentially.
Yeah, maybe this makes VCarb. Some things make sense. But looking at it here, Alpine is 59, Haas has 54. Nico Hülkenberg has been looking quite strong recently. If they feel like Ocon is really underperforming and could potentially lose them millions of dollars in
and to put a
Abu rookie Dhabi.
In bottom in with a rookie, though?
He's crazy. They must really have no faith in him. That's wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
That's crazy. Wow. Okay, well, we also have to talk, of course, about the incredible F1 Academy weekend. It's the second to last race weekend for the F1 Academy ladies. And while Abby Pulling headed into the weekend leading the championship, there were still several women in mathematical contention for the title fight. It was a very tight battle also between kind of from P2 to P6. And it looks like constructors will come down to the wire in Abu Dhabi, the last race between Prema, Roden, and Campos. But we have to, of course, congratulate Abby Pulling on an incredibly dominant season. Wow. Just all season long. She had something like 7 P1s, I think 3 P2s, and a P3. Just actually wild. Insane. And I think 7 or 8 pole positions. So she won the championship here, our second ever F1 Academy champion. And what's so exciting is she gets that fully funded seat for GB3 in 2025, which is amazing.
So to break down the weekend a little bit, we had Dorian Pont topping both practice sessions this weekend, followed by Abby Pulling and Maya Wu. So they had the kind of like the same layout for both of the practice sessions. For quali, we had an amazing quali session for Dorian Pan. Again, she's with Mercedes. She had a double pole position. Then we had Maya in P2 for both, and then Abby in P3 for both as well. We also had an amazing showing from the wild card, Alicia Palmowski. She got P4 for the second race, which I think is so cool to see when a wild card slash rookie comes in and shakes it up a little bit.
For the first race, this is where Abby secured the driver's championship after finishing second behind Dorian. Abby needed just 18 points from the final four races, and she got 18 points here from her P2 finish. And as champion, like Tiggy was saying, Abby is just 21, and she's going to get a fully funded seat in the GB3 series with Rota Motorsports for 2025, which is so exciting.
She was so stoked, of course, about the championship. But one of the things that struck me the most was just how relieved and happy she felt about kind of knowing what she's doing next year. Because one thing that she was saying is she was like, every single winter I go in not knowing what I'm going to be doing 100% next year, which is so stressful. And it's really hard to get financial backing for any motorsport athlete, but especially for these women. So I think just the relief felt very palpable to me for that celebration. But race two, in a very unfortunate turn of events, it was canceled due to extended barrier repairs on the circuit. So the barrier sustained damage on track prior to the race, and it was delayed before being canceled. So no points were awarded for the race, but Dorian Pan will get her 2 points for pole position. So I guess that's good for her, but sad that the race was canceled. Such a bittersweet thing, but I'm happy that Abby got the championship, at least after race one.
Okay, before we jump into a really quick Abu Dhabi GP preview, last bit of news on the F1 world, the GM Cadillac announcement. So America's officially in the F1 game. Last week, GM Cadillac announced they will be entering the sport. They had previously faced resistance when they had Michael Andretti at the helm. We've talked at length about this, but he is taking a step back, and it looks like that was enough to appease F1 and give them a change of heart. And one really good question that we got from a listener was, well, I thought we already had an American team. Isn't Haas technically an American team? And yes, they are technically an American team. They were founded by an American businessman, Gene Haas, and it's headquartered in North Carolina. But most of, if not all of their F1 operations are out of their European base in England. They also have the Italian chassis and use Ferrari engines. That's kind of why we're really excited about the GM Cadillac. It's going to feel more like an all-American team.
GM is such an American
brand. Oh, yeah. And so is Cadillac. Too. We were just saying, like, our grandpas drove Cadillacs.
Yeah, literally.
And Chevy, so it too. Feels, yeah, it's so American. Yeah.
It definitely feels American in a way that Haas, to me, does not. So I think you can argue the technicalities here, but I think GM, Cadillac, born and bred, American.
Yeah.
Jumping into a quick Abu Dhabi GP preview for next weekend, the last race of the season. And even though the Drivers' Championship is spoken for, constructors will be decided here between McLaren and Ferrari. This circuit is really interesting. It's located on the Yas Island, just east of Abu Dhabi, which is a major new tourist destination. Construction started in 2007 and was completed in 2009, and it's supposedly the most expensive circuit in history. It was built on the man-made Yas Island and reportedly cost about $1 billion. And it's got a marina area that some people think kind of rivals the Monte Carlo atmosphere. It has a large hotel right in the middle of the circuit. The circuit actually passes underneath. There's a lot of interesting features here. The circuit itself is 5.3 kilometers, 53 laps, two DRS zones, and plus some challenging corners and even a few low speed corners. So there's some nice variety and overtaking opportunities here.
For last year's race, so Max picked up his 19th win of the season, even with strong pressure from Charles. So a very different looking season last year. He had already, and Red Bull had already sealed constructors and drivers. And George had a podium that sealed P2 and constructors for Mercedes, which was big for them. Lando and Oscar got P5 and P6, locking in P4 for McLaren. And we had a standout moment from Yuki in quali, plus his last lap battle with Hamilton. So those are just a few highlights. But yeah, let's get into our hot takes. It's going to be a fun one. Last race of the season. I cannot believe we're here.
Okay. Oof. Okay. So right off the bat, I'm going to say that Doohan does pull his weight and get top 10 and cinch P6 for Alpine. And then I'm also going to say I want McLaren to win, but I also want both Ferraris on podium. So whoa. I'm going to say Sainz beats Charles.
Okay. I'm going to go with McLaren takes constructors. That's not really a hot take. That's more of a prediction, but it does feel like it's all up in the air. To counterbalance my lukewarm take, I'm going to go in hot with a Lewis win.
It would be amazing.
Insane, but there have been crazier things to have happened, and I want Lewis to come so strong into the final race of the season with Mercedes, cap off an incredible career, and just feel good about what's happened and what is next.
Love it.
That is my severe manifestation heading into Abu Dhabi.
I like that. I'm going to go with a surprise podium. So I think I would count in here anyone that's not McLaren, Ferrari, Max, or George. And so that I would include this as Lewis, just given of the morale, and also Checo, of course, and then anyone else on the rest of the grid. I feel like Lewis, we're going to have P1, someone up there.
Checo P2, Jack Doohan P3.
Heard it here first.
Perfect. Well, with that, I cannot believe we only have one more race to go. We will obviously be back to recap that. We're also going to be releasing an incredible interview. You saw on our Instagram, probably in Vegas, that we interviewed James Hinchcliffe. So that will be dropping on Thursday. So stay tuned for that. Then we'll be back for the recap and go from there.
Crazy. Thanks, everyone.